Hey, everybody. Welcome to Wednesday, January the 13th. You're listening to WVEWLP 107.7 FM Brattleboro Community Radio. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. I am yet again flying solo. Becca is homesick, so we wish her the best. Get well soon, Miss Becca. And we're just going to get started right away. So last week, I was reading about this new campaign called Queer the Census, launched by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. I wanted to hear so much more about it, so I sent off a quick email. I received a super quick reply, and with that, I mean, that's how easy this is sometimes, folks. I am most pleased to welcome tonight's first guest, Dr. Jamie Grant, Director of the Policy Institute at the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. Jamie, how are you?
I'm great, Ken. How are you tonight?
Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for calling in. So just to start out, let's dive right in. For folks that may not know what the Policy Institute is, tell us about the Policy Institute.
Well, the Policy Institute is a part of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, and I like to think of it as the LGBT movement's sort of, you know, premier think tank.
There you go.
We do policy research that helps arm grassroots activists at the, you know, local, state, federal level with, you know, the arguments they need, the data they need to argue for our civil rights and equality. We also try to create sort of big conversations in the community to help us think more strategically about the way we're going after social change.
Now, how about this Queer the Census?
Yeah, I'm excited about the campaign. You know, the task force has been in the census business for a long time. We were really the first organization in 1990 to alert the community to the possibility of being visible on the census when the census added the unmarried partner designation in 1990.
This is some good organizing that we have going on. What is the plan for Queer the Census?
Well, the history of this is in 1990 when the census created the unmarried partner box, there was a chance for LGBT people to be visible on a federal survey for the first time in history. Because the census wasn't really interested in collecting data about us. They wanted to collect data on heterosexual couples who were, you know, unmarried but raising family. You know, the census is interested in how we create family configurations, how we live, our income, you know, race categories, age. You know,
right.
So it can get a snapshot of American life. So because we could check our genders on our form and we could check whether we were unmarried partners or not, it was the first time we were able to be visible. So the 1990 and 2000 effort first collected data on 190,000 couples, then 600,000 couples in 2000, because the community had really begun to understand how data could be significant to our social change work. For instance, when you have a portrait of a community, a real portrait, it's harder for the right wing to make up lies about us.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the census has shown that we don't live in, you know, five urban areas. You know, we're not all white. We're not all economically affluent.
There's all kinds of us.
Yes. The sort of hedonistic, devoid of responsibility, you know, unattached to the rest of, you know, the American fabric of life, you know, portrait of us. Really, the census has changed all that. We know that LGBT people live in 99% of all counties all over the country. We are not economically privileged in the way that the tales are told about us. In fact, those of us that are raising children are doing so generally on lower incomes than our heterosexual counterparts.
Right.
So, you know, the census has helped us start to have a picture, but only through collecting samples of LGBT couples. And we know that there are many more of us who are not in couples and living in households with couples than there are those that can even be counted. The task force really, I think, is trying to pick up on the righteous outrage of the community about still being excluded to such a great extent and such an important pivotal effort in the way that our nation looks at itself and makes plans on how to serve our vulnerabilities and take care of, you know, our families and our kids for 10 years, right? So Queer the Census is a campaign where you can go to the website, www.queerthecensus.org, press a button, and order a sticker, and the sticker will come in the mail. And after you fill out your census forms, you know, truthfully and accurately as you can.
Let's be honest, folks.
You can take this big pink sticker and put it on the back of your census form, and it says, are you lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender? Check the boxes that apply. And it's our way of showing the federal government that we're here, we're queer, and they need to count us. We're hoping thousands and thousands of census forms will come in with a big, fat, pink sticker on them, and all these workers, you know, it will be noted by the government that there's a movement among LGBT people to demand that we be counted in all federal surveys, not just the census, although the census is certainly the gold standard. You know, health surveys, education surveys,
right,
labor statistics.
Jamie, I have to tell you, I'm sitting here shaking my head a bit because, you know, we have all the stories in the news right now and all the different LGBT issues, and this is one where we're actually just trying to be counted. And it just seems so basic and in some ways so silly and bothersome.
Yes. And, you know, the things that have been said about it is like, oh, you know, it's a silly thing to look at, or, you know, it costs money to change these things. It doesn't really matter. And yet, the very little bit of federal data that has been collected on us shows that there are good reasons to ask the LGBT.
Absolutely.
Question. For instance, Health and Human Services has asked sexual orientation and gender identity questions on a handful of health surveys, small, mostly HIV-related health surveys over the last 20 years. And what those studies have shown is people who do check the LGBT boxes have health disparities. They have, you know, specific vulnerabilities around
right.
their health that are not understood, that are not fully explained by any research that's been done so far, which there's very little. And there's one lesbian, there's one women's health survey that a bunch of lesbian activists, you know, over a decade ago got the lesbian question on. And that's a major nurses survey, a longitudinal study of women out of Harvard, that that data has shown over time that lesbians have specific vulnerabilities around obesity, higher rates of smoking and drinking,
right,
higher risks for cancers. For some gynecological cancers. And yet, even though HHS said in its Healthy People, you know, 2010 program, which started in 2000 and set all these benchmarks to address health disparities, we were identified in that report as a community with health disparities, and yet HHS dedicated no funding to either study or address any of them over those 10 shameful years. And so, we know this is not a superfluous question. We know, like any population, community, culture, we have specific strengths, we have vulnerabilities, we have different ways that we organize our families and our lives, and that those need to be studied just like any other community needs to be studied.
Absolutely. I mean, when you read the different stories, for folks to stand up and say, we're here, we're queer, oh, no, that's cliche, that's over. No, we're really still trying to be recognized in the most basic way that our government counts people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just incredible. Now, you have done a ton of work with leadership issues, and we talk a lot about leadership in the gay community on this show. Where is the leadership right now in the gay community? How do we cultivate new leaders? Are we doing well? How are we doing?
Well, you know, I was at the task force 20 years ago doing fundraising work then, and now I've been back about 3 years, fast forward 18 years later. So it's been kind of interesting to sort of watch the movement over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been lucky to go to our Creating Change conference about 10 times across that 20-year span. I've really been able to watch the movement sort of grow up. And I think it's a pretty exciting time, actually. I mean, I think that the democratization of organizing, some of it that's happened through the Internet, has made for a lot of new, really interesting voices and a lot of new engagement from all corners. You know, you don't have to be in a big LGBT mecca to feel a lot of community, have a lot of community, and have a community of organizers and advocates around you. And you don't have to be sort of an anointed leader to put your opinions out.
Absolutely.
And to, you know, there are a lot of resources to form your opinions and your ideas about leadership that didn't exist 20 years ago. And I got to say, Creating Change, you know, 2,000 people come every year. It's coming up again in Dallas this year at the end of January, beginning of February. I find it enormously energizing and gives you a lot of hope seeing both people who've been dedicated over 20 years still show up and still have fire in the belly about, you know, our liberation.
Absolutely.
And also just seeing all the young people from, you know, every culture, class, community that you could imagine identifying in their own way as an LGBT person and defining what justice is for them.
And it's so rooted in creating change. This isn't just a bunch of folks getting together to talk about the world. This is an active process, and that's why it's just such a fantastic conference.
I like to think of creating change as sort of the movement's big strategic planning moment for the year. You know, different networks come together. The health centers come together. The community centers come together. People who are doing LGBT organizing on campuses come together. People who are running statewide LGBT organizations come together. The big groups, the small groups, the church groups. And, you know, it's really a time to sit and strategize, to rethink, to recharge. And it's a blast. It's a lot of really, you know, fun, hot, sexy, smart people.
Absolutely.
And it's just a great way to see, you know, the best of the movement in action.
Every college student that I have sent to that conference has come back with a fire in their eyes. It's just, it's marvelous. It's a great thing.
I'll tell you, there's a great youth cohort that comes every year, you know, like 18 to 24. And really, as young as, you know, 16, 15 sometimes. And I mean, it's a great place for young people to find each other and start to develop their group of peers, you know, that will help them develop themselves as leaders over the course of their whole lifetimes, I think.
Jamie Grant, you like going to work.
I do. I feel very lucky to go to work. I'm very privileged to have this position. And, you know, it's an honor to work for the task force. It's an organization that's made an enormous difference in our communities, and I feel it's a big public trust to be a task force staffer.
So give out the website one more time for folks to learn more about Queer in the Census.
Yes, www.queerthecensus.org, and also if you want to learn more about the task force, www.thetaskforce.org.
I mean, could it be any easier for them to just click and get that pink sticker?
Get that sticker.
It's easy. This is an easy one. Jamie, you are doing some incredible work there at the task force. We are so appreciative. We're so appreciative. Best of luck with this campaign.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Jamie.
Gotta get dip. Gotta get dip. Gotta get dip. Gotta get dip, 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 dip. Boom, boom, boom. Gotta get 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 dip. Boom, boom, boom. That boom, boom, boom. That boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom. Yo, I got that hit to beat the block. You can get that bass on below. I got that rock and roll. That future flow. That digital spit. Next level visual shit. I got that boom, boom.
Spaceship. When I step inside the room, them girls go ape shit. Y'all stuck on super ape shit. That lo-fi stupid ape bit. I'm on that HD flat. This beat go boom boom bap. I'm a beast when you turn me on. Into the future, Cybertron. Harder, faster, better, stronger. Texting ladies extra longer. Cause we gotta beat that bounce. We gotta beat that pound. We gotta beat that 808. That boom boom in your town.
People. Here we go, satellite radio, y'all get hit with the boom, boom, beat so big, beat drop. Let the beat drop.
This beat be bumping, bumping. This beat go boom, boom. I like that boom, boom, pow. Them chickens jogging my style. They try to copy my swagger. I'm on that next shit now. I'm sold 3008. You sold 2000 and late. I got that boom, boom, boom. That future boom, boom, boom. Let me get it now.
Boom, boom, boom. Gotta get that. 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 Boom, boom, boom. That boom, boom, boom. That boom.
Don't think that we're not going to talk about that song, because we are going to talk about that song with tonight's next guest. Guest, are you there?
I'm here.
Fantastic. David Daniels, folks, has appeared with the world's major opera companies and performed on the world's main concert and recital stages. We're talking just everywhere. He made history as the first countertenor to give a solo recital in the main auditorium of Carnegie Hall. The Chicago Tribune has called him, quote, today's gold standard among countertenors. Gramophone magazine has named him one of the top 10 trailblazers in classical music today. And, I mean, the reviews of David Daniels are glittering, but I have to read this one. And this is from the San Francisco Examiner, because this is one of my favorite ones. They wrote, quote, shaping the music as convincingly as he dramatizes it was managed to perfection by countertenor David Daniels. His laments were gorgeous, and his rapid coloratura aria after saving his rival's life was electrifying. Here, folks, to perform an entirely different coloratura. David Daniels, welcome to this show, It's So Gay.
Thank you.
How are you?
Great to be here. I'm well. I'm in my loft here in Atlanta, Georgia, watching American Idol with my partner, Scott, and...
Well, now, wait a second. This wasn't even on the interview list. I wasn't planning it. How critical are you being there of these singers?
Oh, this is the fun part. This is where they do the auditions. I do watch American Idol, and more in the earlier seasons. So many times, you know, the show's on, I'm in Europe, so they don't play it over there. But I enjoy watching it.
You enjoy it. Now, this is, I'm going to segue right into this. We actually talked about this last week. We had Aaron Hicklin, the editor-in-chief of Out Magazine, was on the show. We were talking a lot about Adam Lambert, and him being an Out performer and whether or not that is detrimental to his career. David Daniels, your take on Adam Lambert.
I think times have certainly changed, and I mean, whether... I don't think it was going to be a big shock to anybody about his sexuality.
I had no idea. No, I'm just kidding. I know.
he's in a different part of the music business than I'm in. Opera and classical music just isn't as big as American Idol and the pop scene. I don't know. My guess is that if he's talented and his music speaks for itself, he's not going to have any problem with his sexuality. I mean, there are plenty of openly gay artists. It certainly hasn't hurt Elton John, has it?
No, not even a bit. Are you saying that he's gay too? I got to catch
I'm
up.
I'm having him right here on
yes.
your station.
That is really where he came out, was on the local Access Vermont radio station. So much to talk about, David Daniels. Now, I'm going to take you back. I'm going to take you all the way back to 2001 when you did an interview with a publication called The Independent. And this was a quote from that article. The writer wrote, "The issue of vocal effeminacy is a tedious one for any countertenor. So it's hardly surprising that David Daniels is tired of seeing the same old adjectives time and time again." That was close to 10 years ago. Are we still fighting the same battle for countertenors?
I think there's progress in that it's not such an oddity as it was even 10 years ago. I travel around the world. I travel around the U.S. to universities doing master classes with young singers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a countertenor or two in undergrad as an 18-year-old freshman, you know, singing as a countertenor. And this was unheard of when I first began to sing professionally back in the early 90s. In regards to sexuality and the voice, I think that it's often automatically considered that a man is gay if he's singing as a countertenor. And the ironic thing is that's absolutely not the norm. It's not the case. I would say the majority of my colleagues that are countertenors are actually heterosexuals.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I'm fascinated by this only because I'm not sure that I was even planning on talking about it, but you were very upfront about it on your website. And there are a couple quotes on your website, one in particular, and this is a quote from David Daniels' website, quote, "I don't think my voice is feminine, though I understand that's probably the easiest way to describe it. Anyone watching me produce the sound does, I'm sure, pick up on an essentially masculine quality."
It's there. Well, first of all, there's no such thing as a female countertenor.
There you go.
So I mean, it is going to be a masculine. It's masculine in that the countertenor voice comes out of a man. Whether you hear that, if you listen to a CD of mine, I'm sure it's going to be a little different than seeing me perform live.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't really get so caught up in it anymore.
Oh, good. Because you, I hear, by the way, I have it on very good authority that you are a crazy sports nut. We're not just talking you catch an occasional game. You are a sports nut.
No, I'm a sports nut. Absolutely. Have been forever. I've been a sports nut probably as long as I've known I was gay. So I know it's sort of an oddity, but there's no reason. I was not forced into watching it. My family watched sports growing up. I played basketball in high school, and it's my outlet. You know, we laugh about the Black Eyed Peas and
oh, we'll get to that
pop music, but it's really my outlet is sports from my business. It's not listening to pop music.
Not a lot of out people in sports, though. We talk about that a lot on this show. Not a lot of...
If Adam Lambert was a a baseball player, we might be having a different discussion.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. Now, can we talk a little bit about opera?
Sure.
All right. So I was doing my research on the connection between gay men and opera. And I came across this quote, which I thought was very interesting. "Gay and lesbian subtexts frequently hover beneath the surface of opera. The singer's sex may not be the same as the sex of the character he or she is playing. These ambiguities allow the composer to investigate the complex fluidity of sexuality in ways that spoken theater rarely does." What is the connection with gay men in opera, David?
The diva.
Is it the diva?
It's the diva. The biggest stars in opera have always been the soprano diva. And that, I don't know what it is, but there's a connection with gay men. And frankly, before I became a professional singer, I was one of them, what we call the opera queen.
The opera queen.
And it is. It's all about the soprano. I think that's pretty much what brings gay men to opera. You know, there are stars that are baritones. There are stars, even, of course, tenors with Plácido Domingo. I mean, you know, you can't get a bigger star than that.
Right.
So there are, but you compare that to the divas of opera, of Maria Callas, of today, you know, Renee Fleming.
Don't you think someone just fainted? They heard the name Maria Callas and they fainted.
I don't know that story.
No, I just think it just happened. I have talked to people who are so obsessed with her that you just said that and four people just fainted somewhere.
I believe it. No, and they're passionate about her. I don't really get on the internet and read opera chat rooms and things. I'm way too thin-skinned for that. But they get very passionate and very hateful in their discussions about singers and about their ladies.
Wow. What's the gayest opera out there?
Anyone I'm in.
Come on!
I don't know. I mean, you know, the rep I sing is all from the 18th century, and it was I sing the roles that were written for the castrated men in Italian, the castrati, and these were men that were altered, castrated right at adolescence, so they kept their soprano high voices, but yet grew into these men. And although the art of castration is not, obviously doesn't happen now, the countertenors have taken this repertoire. So, I mean, the quote you just read earlier about the ambiguity of different sexes being different, you know, I mean, I do a Handel opera called Partenope, and done in a few theaters. And in that, you have me singing the title role, or not title role, but the male lead, singing as a countertenor in you know the male alto. And you've got a woman playing my, or as a mezzo-soprano,
mm-hmm.
and she comes back dressed as a man, because I've gotten rid of her, so because I wanted to be with Partenope. So she comes back to make my life a living hell, and she's dressed as a man. So it is a sexual ambiguity that you have in it, and it's interesting.
Yeah, I have to say, just talking about within the gay community, maybe it's just the gay community that I associate with, opera tends to be so polarizing. You either have your opera queens, or you have the other end of people, no, I don't listen to opera. And I don't find a lot of middle ground of people who casually listen to opera.
I think you're leaving one set out.
Who am I leaving out?
You're leaving out the ones who want to be seen.
Ah.
It's the ones who come to opera because it's a social status.
Oh.
To opera.
We're not into that, are we?
And that exists as well. But those aren't the passionate people.
We don't like those people.
Well... We do some because they're usually the ones that are giving the money
right.
to be done.
We want them to keep buying tickets, but I don't know. I mean, you perform in all of these operas, so many of them about tortured love, and then you leave the stage, you walk back into the real world, and you see things like Prop 8 fights on TV and YouTube. Do you ever want to just go back to the stage and, you know what, I'm just going to keep being Oberon, or I'm going to walk around in Georgia and be Oberon? How do you reconcile your life on the stage with the tortured love that you see out in the real world?
Well, I just try to stay realistic about that, and you know I have a voice politically. I don't get myself too involved in the political side of things. I have enough to worry about with my singing, and frankly, you know I'm not sure the world. I said earlier in the interview that the world of opera is not the same as the world of pop. And so my voice as an opera singer and as a classical musician, I don't think carries quite the weight as a TV star or a movie star or a pop singer would have. So I'm not sure, even if I was a politically driven person, I'm not so sure I could do so much. My sort of gift to that was just to be openly out and proud of that.
Well, but let's not minimize that, because as we said earlier, the number of out gay opera singers, are they so plentiful out there?
No, it's actually the opera world, the singer side of the opera world is very heterosexual, actually.
Fascinating.
So there still is a stigma, especially with tenors and baritones. I feel that... you know, it's nobody's business, their sexuality, and if they happen to be gay, and they are afraid that it could affect their career.
Really?
Yeah, it's still out there. I see it quite often.
Now, you, sir, have traveled the world, have you not?
I have.
Any place that you're thinking, well, gosh, they have this gay thing down pat, this is a great place to be?
Oh, I mean, I think that there are a lot of places, not just, I think you would automatically think Europe, but, or one would automatically think Europe.
Right.
But it's, I mean, I think, no, I mean, San Francisco's got it down pretty good.
They're doing all right.
They're doing all right. New York City's not so bad either. And frankly, your state got it together pretty well.
Vermont's not doing so bad.
I've only been to Vermont once. I did a recital at Middlebury College.
Oh, that's pretty good. It's not, I can't say it's the biggest opera place. I did go to an opera recently. We went and saw the Boston Lyric Opera.
Yeah, that's not far from you, is it?
No, not too bad. So can we talk a little bit about your music selections?
Yeah, I mean, I came up with two, right? And that's really, as I said, sports is really sort of my outlet from my career and from work and from learning music and from stress.
Well, I have to say, it was such a funny email that I got, because, you know, we ask our guests, oh, give us some songs and we'll play your songs and we'll learn more about you. And the precursor was, well, David Daniels doesn't really listen to a lot of popular music, but how about Lady Gaga, which I just thought was fantastic.
I've learned most of this. I've learned from my new boyfriend, who I've been with now for about a year and 1 month.
Nice.
And he certainly knows the pop world more than I do. And And we have certain places that we like to go out in Atlanta, and so I've gotten to know that music a lot more. When I was going out to clubs and stuff, it was Private Dancer and
Cadillac. Why didn't you request those? I would play those in a heartbeat.
Because I would have really dated myself.
There's no dating yourself with Tina Turner. It's timeless. It's timeless. But because we will be playing it in a few minutes, you must tell our listening audience what you think Lady Gaga's Bad Romance says about David Daniels.
You're putting me on the spot.
A little bit.
It just says nothing about me.
Oh, come on.
It's a fun song. It's a fun video, too.
It's a fantastic video.
Yeah. That's her most recent, I admit.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Now, what about the Black Eyed Peas? Another very interesting selection from world-famous countertenor David Daniels.
Well, they're just fun.
They're fun.
And the place that we go, I'm not going to say the name of the place that we like to go, but they play the Black Eyed Peas, this Boom Boom Pow, all the time. So we get to hear that quite often.
Now,
maybe incorporating it in, as an encore or something in one of my recitals.
David Daniels, I am there.
you'd buy a ticket, wouldn't you?
That's not to imply that I would not otherwise.
Well, you wouldn't have to, because if I was actually to do that, I would fly you there.
I'm there. I will do the introduction. I will wear some Carmen-type outfit. Or perhaps the bullfighter. That would be fantastic. So are we rooting for anybody on American Idol yet? We're still in the people are bad phase.
We're still in the prelims. Yeah, this is the funny one where they make fun of people and stuff.
Now, is your partner an opera aficionado?
No, he's more into, he's a choral conductor and he's also a singer, but he's more into symphonic rap. And he enjoys opera and he's, over the first year, he's been able to travel with me a lot. So
that's fantastic. What are your earliest opera memories? What turned you on to opera?
Well, I was a situation where I grew up with parents who were singers, and both my parents were opera singers and both voice teachers. My father was a baritone and my mother was a soprano, and so I just was one of these weird children at 8 years old that's putting the LP on of all these great old opera singers. And it's what I wanted to do forever, and it's what I always sort of visualized myself doing, and it's what I've been passionate about. And I've been really fortunate to be able to make a career of what I always dreamed about doing.
And when was the part when the first person said, hey, you're a countertenor, and you said, a what?
No, I mean, I would entertain, I was a boy soprano before my voice changed, and when the voice changed, I just never lost that voice, that high treble voice, even though I tried to sing, as a tenor, as you're supposed to, a tenor or a baritone. And I would entertain at parties and undergrad school, and I've said in interviews, I'm not making this up off the top of my head, but I've said in interviews before that, after a box of wine, they would sort of prop me up in the corner of these parties with a sheet and some dried flowers. And I'd sing these soprano arias and entertain for people.
I think we all need to just pause for a second. All right, we're collected. Okay, we're moving on. There we go. That's hilarious. Who's that in the corner? Oh, that's Orpheus with his lute. He's just in the corner.
It was entertaining and it was fun. But I was serious about it. But even listening to that, and those people would have heard something unique. Nobody ever said to me, have you ever thought about being a countertenor? No, just nobody thought about that kind of thing at that time.
Right. Now you love what you do.
I do for most of the time, yeah.
Okay. That's what I like to hear. Now what's coming up? Where should folks go see you?
Well, this weekend, I'm in Washington, D.C., and I'm singing with the U.S. Army Chorus.
Wow.
Brahms Alto Rhapsody, which I've never sung before. It's my first one. And a friend of mine is in the chorus. I was his best man at his wedding. And we've been friends since, he was 5 and I was 8. And so I'm going to go up and sing with a bunch of men in uniform.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
On so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little, you know, openly gay man singing like a woman standing in front of the Army chorus. It's, yeah, don't ask, don't tell.
I mean, they might as well just prop you up in the corner with a box of wine and just set you up in that way.
Well, to tell you the truth, this piece is so difficult to sing, I just might do that.
And folks, for our opera aficionados, if you're looking for the secret, there it is. It's right there. It's right there. And where should folks go to learn more about you?
About me? Well, I would love to tell you to go to my website, but it's probably one of the worst that's ever been.
No! Done. What are you talking about?
Oh, I don't keep it up. I mean, if I didn't have to have a website for schedule reasons, and for fans to see, you know, where I'm singing next, I probably wouldn't even have one because I just don't. I'm just not the kind of person that keeps up with these people that write blogs and things on their websites. Just
it's not you.
I just don't have the time and I don't have the interest.
So the David Daniels Twitter account not coming anytime soon.
Exactly. You won't see that ever. I mean, I'm not even on Facebook, so that's, you know. It just doesn't interest me.
Now, you do know that there is a David Daniels fan page on Facebook.
I am aware of that.
Okay, just checking.
And I'm also aware there's a David Daniels fan club on Yahoo groups.
These are not officially sanctioned.
Well, it's not officially sanctioned by me.
Well, you're the official.
Exactly. Nor do I go on it and read as a, you know, as an imposter.
but if folks did want to go to your website, where would they go?
It is www.danielssings with two S's in the middle, danielssings.com.
Well, there you go. I have to tell you, people were flipping out that you were going to be calling into the show. Flipping out.
That's sweet, thank you.
Flipping out. So it's just an absolute pleasure to have you on. All the best in Washington, D.C. That sounds like fun. Are we going to be able to
really
see that?
Looking forward to it, actually.
Is that, are we YouTubing that? Not, you're not YouTubing that, but will someone else be recording it? Or?
Well, it's a church in Vienna, Virginia, which is that presents the Army Chorus, and they're actually streaming it live on their website, but I don't know the church's name. I can't help you out. But I think if you went to, there must be an Army Chorus website. And
that's just entertaining on a whole nother level.
Yeah,
no, that's great.
I know.
Anything else? What's after the Army Chorus? What's the next big gig?
I do a recital tour with my accompanist Martin Katz in Europe, in Munich and Berlin and London. And then I make my Chicago Symphony debut in March, on my birthday, March 12th.
Fantastic. A Pisces.
A Pisces.
Like me. We're Pisces sticking together.
I was destined because you know who shares my birth date? Not the same year, but the day.
Tell me.
Liza Minnelli.
Come on.
So, there you go. Did I have a chance?
It was destined.
It was destined.
Well, happy early birthday. We're getting there.
Thank you very much.
And have an amazing Chicago debut. An absolute, absolute treat having you on the show.
Thank you for asking.
So, David Daniels, happy new year. Have a great birthday and keep on singing.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. I have to tell you, I can't even listen to that song anymore because, and I said this a few weeks ago, because of the Sherry Vine parody that she does of that song. It has, to say that it has forever changed that song for me, I'm sitting here in the studio just cracking up like there's no tomorrow. So if you've not yet checked out Sherry Vine's rendition, interpretation of Lady Gaga's Bad Romance, you must go check it out. You must go check it out. So a couple quick news items for you all out there. The United States Supreme Court has ruled that cameras will not be allowed in the courtroom for the high-profile federal case challenging California's same-sex marriage ban. The court was split 5-4 earlier today with conservative justices in the majority, according to the Associated Press. And former Clinton advisor and attorney Richard Socarides expressed his disappointment to The Advocate shortly after that decision. He said, quote, "The ruling means the public will be denied a wide-angle, first-hand experience of what's happening inside, probably the most important trial of our lifetime. Disappointing, but nothing that will impact the ultimate result, one we sincerely hope brings justice." So there's that ruling. But you can... I have not watched it yet. Have folks out there watched the YouTube streaming video of the California case? I have not seen even a second of that. I should tune that on. And then the other shout out that I wanted to give was for this article that's on the cover of The Advocate right now. And it's called Gays versus the Democratic Party. Quote, "They're fond of your checkbooks and deaf to your demands for equal rights. What will it take for the Democratic Party to step up?" Go and check that out. I'm having kind of an interesting week with President Obama, because, you know, we hang, where I was doing, was in some random workshop, and someone had to be against President Obama, and in, it was a role play, and he couldn't do it. He was saying it was for the sake of being contrary. We were expressing contrary opinions, and he was sitting there, and he was in the position where, for the sake of the role play, he had to be contrary to President Obama, and I suppose that this gentleman who was doing this role play was extraordinarily Democratic and supported President Obama, which I am extraordinarily Democratic and I support President Obama, but he couldn't come up with any rhetoric. He couldn't come up with, well, this is why Obama is not doing so well. And I was sitting there in my chair thinking, well, yeah, I don't know. I got some stuff. I have all the commitments that he made to the LGBT community. So I am rapidly, rapidly spiraling downwards with my support of President Obama with each passing day and fulfilling some of the promises that he made to the LGBT community. When, as we talked earlier tonight with Jamie from the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, when we're just fighting to even be counted on a census, there is some basic human rights stuff going on that we really do need our president who has promised such to step up and represent. So just want to put that out there. My thoughts, my heart goes out to everybody who has family in Haiti. Obviously, anybody who's connected to Haiti in any way. It's a terrible tragedy that's going on right now there in Haiti. So just want to put that out there. And not easy to transition from that to anything else. But as always, thank you so much for listening to our show. Becca will be back next week. We have amazing, amazing guests lined up. I mean, that was a world-famous countertenor that we just had on the show. By the way, notice how I still say we, even though it's just me. It's just me sitting here. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com, which is also the name of our show, thisshowissogay.com. And you can click on Upcoming, and you can check out all the guests that we have coming up in the next couple months. We're pretty scheduled out. Drop us an email. We love getting our emails. Love, love, love getting our emails. We respond to each and every email. thisshowissogay@aol.com. And last but not least, please, please join our Facebook group. It's all going down. All going down on the Facebook. And with that, I do believe I'm leaving you all, and I will be on my merry way. I am going to play a little David Daniels for you. David Daniels will play us out. This is not a live recording. He didn't just sing this for me. But this is David Daniels singing Orpheus with his lute. Get out there, folks. Do amazing things. Go sing some opera. Go learn about queering the census. Do these things. They're so easy. With one click of the button, you're going to get this pink sticker. You're going to put it on your census. And you're going to change the things. That's how easy it is. You're going to change things by doing that. So go do that. And remember, above all else, my friends out there in the world, why be gay when you can be so gay?